Welcome to the Security Weekly News wrap-up for the week of 19 June 2022. This week, Fancy Bears nukes, CISA NSA on PowerShell, and lots more crime, as well as all the show wrap-ups on the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Monitoring and maintaining compliance is a never-ending struggle with a high price of failure. FireMon helps customers meet complex and varying compliance requirements. FireMon has fully customizable reporting, analytics, assessments, and dashboards to meet the compliance needs of any organization. With FireMon, compliance reports take a tenth of the time, and real-time continuous compliance eliminates the anxiety and headaches of audit preparation. Improve security outcomes by improving security operations with FireMon. Visit securityweekly.com/FireMon to learn more.
Right now, everybody is talking about cryptocurrency, and the cyber criminals are hiding in the conversation. Cyber criminals use social engineering loaded with urgency and fear to successfully prey on your company, your employees, and your customers. Spear phishing is just one of the 13 types of email threats. Barracuda has identified 13 types and shows you how you can protect your company, your customers, and your reputation. Find out about the 13 email threat types and Barracuda email protection by going and getting your free ebook at securityweekly.com/barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/barracuda.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jason Wood, and this is the Security Weekly News wrap-up for wrap-up show, episode 219. Dr. Doug will be back with us next week on the show as normal. This week in the shows, we start off with the Application Security Weekly episode number 201, where John and Mike talked about the checkered history of browser security and really the issues around writing the code to create a web browser. The inspiration for the episode was really kind of taken from the demise of Internet Explorer this week. And they also spent some time discussing the current state of bug bounty programs and comparing that back to the early days of these programs and really just kind of how the tone has changed between the different, from when you would get a response from legal versus now a team organized to handle bug bounties. In the second segment, they covered the application security news for the week. On Business Security Weekly, number 266, Ben, Joe, and Matt had two interviews, actually, in their segments. John Brugman, the consulting CISO at CBTS, was the first guest, and he came on to talk about how the CISO spends their days at work, and really the discussion seemed to focus around risk management. I mean, that's what their job is all about. And John and the team dug into the challenges the CISOs have in guiding this process and balancing, the different issues around the technology versus the business side of things and actually figuring out risk. Brandon Dunlap was the guest on the second segment. Brandon is a leadership partner at Gartner, and the discussion centered on security as far as its seat at the board of organizations. And this, is something that you hear talked about quite a bit. How do we get a seat at the board? How do we get the board to make security a priority? Well, the SEC has provided proposed some guidance on cybersecurity and how it ties in, what the board needs to do around that. And there's been a lot of public comments on this, apparently. The guidance is apparently about 128 pages long. The discussion, there were lots of questions about this idea, some estimates of how this will be, and this will actually end up being implemented. On Enterprise Security Weekly News 278, Adrian, Katie, and Tyler had Tim Morris, the technology strategist at Tanium, to join the episode and talk about Tanium's product data as a service concept. And this kind of caught me a little off guard with that title, but it was actually kind of interesting because they were talking about, you know, how in John's or Tim's previous position, he used a large deployment of Tanium and would have to share out data to other business units, and how he went about that without having to give people access to their console, train people on how to use Tanium and stuff like that. It was really creating the idea of being able to turn around, extracting the data from Tanium and sending it off to folks in a format that they want to consume, and sharing that out so that they can make use of it. So it was a pretty interesting discussion about that capability. In the second segment, they discussed the Enterprise Security Weekly News for the week. And then they had a third segment that was recorded at RSA last week. And this consisted of really two interviews. The first was Chris Cleveland, CEO at Pixum, was interviewed by Matt to discuss how Pixum's product uses computer vision in inside the browser to stop phishing attacks. And the idea here was actually, like I said, they're using computer, describing this idea of computer vision, where it's looking at the page and recognizing that while this looks an awful lot like Facebook, it's actually not in the technical details. And the technology is able to try and protect users even after they click the link and fell for that in the message, provide them some way of giving you some feedback and preventing their system from being compromised. Then Bill Brenner interviewed Mehul Ravankar, VP of Product Management at Qualys, to talk about Qualys's VMDR 2.0 product that really is aimed at helping security teams manage the actual risk of a vulnerability and that what it poses to the organization, where it's placed, different context around it. One of the things that kind of resonated with me was Mehul talked about the idea of getting away from blindly looking at CVSS scores and deciding whether or not to deploy some kind of mitigation or a patch or do something or other to resolve this vulnerability. So I thought that idea was pretty interesting, and their goal is to, Qualys's goal is to do this at scale so that teams can move faster on this. On the Security Weekly News, episode number 218, a little bit of a flashback for me. I talked about a loophole in Office 365's sync to SharePoint and OneDrive of files, typically done by autosave, that basically allows ransomware operators to potentially prevent defenders from recovering data from a ransomware attack. It turns out there is a user configurable maximum number of syncs or file versions that these programs will accept. So, I could change it. By default, it's 500. I could change it to 1 and then just encrypt a couple of times and we're done. Basically, though, you exceed that upper bound of what that maximum number is, then you won't be able to, and then you encrypt the files just a bit more than that, you won't be able to recover the file. All those file versions will be gone. So that's something to be interesting to see if ransomware operators start to take advantage of that. On Paul's Security Weekly, number 745, Paul, Josh, and Tyler interviewed Sam Baun, the founder of InfoSec Decoded, and about how learning security can be much more fun. And I've got to say that Sam was very interesting to listen to. He has a lot of enthusiasm around teaching and learning. In fact, I really laughed. One of the quotes, one of the comments that he made is he loves being a teacher because it allows him to be a student forever. To him, teaching is all about making things fun and hands-on. And just as a kicker, as they were talking through this, Sam has a CTF for COBOL. Now, I looked at it. This is freely available. You can just go to his site, which is in the show notes. And I think I'm going to go ahead and give this a little bit of a try. I know nothing about COBOL, but, hey, it's COBOL. Why not play a little bit? And then in the second segment, the crew discussed the security news in the way that only they can. And now for the final news, or wrap up of our week for the news. Fancy Bear has decided to use Felina in their latest phishing campaigns. Now, Felina is a one-click vulnerability in Microsoft systems, and they are targeting victims in the Ukraine. But they really wanted to push up their user engagement numbers, I guess, and get that payload executing on endpoints. And so they just went for the emotional throat of their victims. Basically, you know, there's worry about Russia's invasion of Ukraine escalating to the use of some kind of nuclear weapon. And so the document title of the weaponized RTF is "Nuclear Terrorism is a Very Real Threat." And so after the recipient of the email has recovered from their immediate anxiety attack, they open up the document. And at this point, that executes the payload on the system. And in this case, it's not the most crazy type of payload. It's an information stealer, looking for credentials, particularly in things like Chrome, Edge, and Firefox, amongst some other data that they're looking for. Once it has that collected up, it basically connects to command and control using IMAP to send out whatever data it has retrieved from the host. I guess there's nothing like the threat of death to get your victim's attention. For anyone who wants to test this out in the phishing scenario test, yeah, don't. Just don't. In a more positive type of security bulletin from the US, the UK, and the New Zealand governments, they're advising organizations not to rip PowerShell out of their environments just because someone read that attackers also like to use it. There's basically, you know, they've apparently noticed that some organizations are panicking over the idea of PowerShell being used maliciously, so folks are... organizations are looking at removing it entirely. Really, I read through the release, at least the one that was published here in the US, and I kind of have to agree with their advice here. It boils down to you've got significant security benefits built into the latest versions of PowerShell and the capability that it provides. We've got improvements in our processes around forensics and incident response and automation, all things that we want to do to help defend and maintain our environment. When the later versions of PowerShell, version 7 is the latest right now, 7.2 I think it was, it has stronger methods for protecting credentials, integration with the anti-malware scanning interface, and other security protections. These improvements started to come in episode 5.1 and greater, and really they were taken, you know, from observing malicious activity in previous versions of PowerShell. The advisory does strongly recommend disabling and completely uninstalling PowerShell version 2, which basically doesn't have a lot of much of any of the security protections that we would like to have, enhanced logging, for example, and things like that. Basically, in the end, the advice is don't put significant limitations on yourself and your ability to manage your environment and respond to stuff. If you do that, honestly, my thought was you're going to likely end up using much more insecures of automation instead, because we're still going to want that. Like those old .bat files hanging around that have credentials in them, and they've been sitting around on file systems still and will be there until the end of time. Moving on to the more criminal aspect of the news, the UK's National Health Service has started sending out warnings to the public to be on the lookout for malicious text messages telling people that they have been exposed to somebody in close quarters who had the Omicron variant of COVID-19. The text message tells the recipient that because of this close contact, they need to order a COVID test kit to confirm whether they are infected or not. And they'll deliver that to your door. Of course, the phishing site looks an awful lot like the NHS's website. They offer what is a free test kit that you'll never receive. It'll only cost you £1 just to cover shipping costs. And if the victim orders the kit, they're not only out the money, but they give up lots of personal information at the same time, you know, their name, addresses, phone numbers, things like that. Not exactly the most cutting edge type of attack, but if it keeps working, why not go simple and old school? Staying in the UK, a large auto parts and service company has apparently had some security problems with their website. and have a habit of ignoring when people contact them and say, you've got a problem. Chris Hatton, a security consultant in the UK, actually ordered a new tire from Halfords, which is the large provider of auto parts and services in the UK, and decided to take a look at the API calls that were being made involved with his request. And he noticed that there was some insecure direct object reference in the API calls. So he poked at that a little bit and found that as long as you have an email address, you get to see everything about the orders associated with that email address, such as phone numbers, address, information about the car, things like that. Now, this was a bit concerning. He didn't really act on it, though, until a few months later. He set up yet another appointment to get some service done on his car, and he saw in his email confirmation that he had a number-based ID, order ID, or appointment ID or something like that, and a place to check on the status of the order. And all you have to do is provide that ID, and boom, there's all the stuff about your appointment, including, again, you know, lots of personal information associated with the customer. The problem comes in, all that somebody needs to do is add one or subtract one from the existing order number, and you look at somebody else's information. So nice old school type of attack here. Again, just change the number off by one, and you're looking at somebody else's details. He contacted Halfords and tried to communicate the issue to them, did not receive any response. So he eventually, I guess, went to the register. Once a news organization called about the issue, Halfords suddenly became very responsive and was very quick to assure the register about how seriously they take their security. Which honestly, I think there's boilerplate written out there for lawyers to use to respond back with how seriously they take their customers' security of their customers' data. And they went on to ensure no banking information was released as part of this. That'll make it all better. I'm a bit skeptical about the nature of how serious they are, given that we've got some very well known and very old and avoidable vulnerabilities going on here. Probably was built by somebody who just has no background in this at all. Speaking of some more old scams, Europol arrested 9 individuals in the Netherlands for using phishing to lure victims in Belgium into giving up their banking credentials. And this is like 2005 all over again. You're getting a phishing email that looks, you know, like it's something from your bank. You click on the link and it's got a login page and you log in with your banking credentials, except you weren't on the bank's website, so the attacker collects those banking credentials. The individuals who were arrested stand accused of stealing several million euros, basically by taking that information, initiating money transfers, using money mules to carry out, you know, the transfer of this stuff and the legwork around it. And apparently, not being content with online crime, they also are accused of trafficking in drugs. So, you know, it's not ransomware, data extortion type of crime. It's definitely, like I said, 2005's call is asking for their old phishing tactics back. And it's not a huge bust that's going to make a massive difference, per se, in the overall scene of online crime. But, hey, I'll take what I can get here when folks like this get arrested. Brian Krebs posted an article about the operators of the RSOX botnet that the U.S. Department of Justice announced that they had taken down last week. Now, I read the takedown or the release by the Department of Justice, and the takedown did not appear to include any arrests of anybody. They just took over the infrastructure and tore that down. So the folks who were operating it are still out running around carrying on with their day-to-day lives, probably scrambling a little bit to get their infrastructure set back up and their operations going again. In the article, Krebs goes through the process of tracing the main operator back to a person going by the name of Dennis Cluster. And he even snagged a picture of Cluster's passport that Cluster posted online in 2019, which I thought was an interesting bit of OPSEC oops. Krebs also found a picture that was on Kloster's website that showed the 20 or so people that he had working for him in his business. Back in 2016, they were celebrating their third year in business, and so they posted that out there. So, I mean, yeah, not much in the way of operational security about this. Then he kind of wraps up with, is RSOX down for good? Well, not according to the RSOX account that Krebs tied back to Kloster. The account released a statement saying, and this is a quote, RSOX ceases to exist, but don't worry. All the active funds, all of the active plans and fund balances will be transferred to another service. Stay tuned. We will inform you about its name and all the details later, end quote. So we're going to rebrand, give it a new name, put it on some new infrastructure, and we'll see this botnet back in action again. Hooray. Gotta love rebranding. According to Bitdefender, the Strava fitness tracking application has had another leak of GPS data. And this data, in this case, is apparently being used or is possible to use it to track members of the Israeli military and in places that the, you know, isn't necessarily widely known that the military was located. Now, if this sounds a little bit familiar, it did to me. Paul and I talked about this back in 2018 about a similar leak of data from Strava, where basically they were tracking members of the U.S. military doing their PT in various locations in like Afghanistan and stuff like that. The latest leak appears to be due to a feature that allows the users to share and compare their runtimes on different segments that they define in locations. And then, you know, so they're running in the spot, they got their path and stuff like that, and it shows, you know, their pace and time and all that other stuff. And they actually show somebody who, you know, it looks like they've got some fake information going on. They've got, you know, folks in locations other than Israel, but then they're setting up segments that are located in Israel so that they can compare with somebody there, get access to this information. I'll be honest. I get the idea of wanting to measure your runtimes. You know, you want to make sure you're getting better at this or see how you're doing. And comparing that with your friends, a little bit of competition and teasing and things like that. However, if I'm in any kind of sensitive role that includes things like the military, intelligence, diplomacy, et cetera, and I'm deployed or what have you, I don't think it's a great idea to upload information about my location and what I'm up to at certain times of the day. So as much fun as it is to brag to your buddies, it is probably not worth it in this situation. And finally, in the humorous and a little bit weird category, Graham Cluley published an article about Amazon's plan to have their voice assistant, which must not be named because she is always listening, speak with the voice of another person. In particular, the example they give, I guess, is they cite the idea of having a child asking Alex with an A on the end read a book to them for bedtime in the voice of their dead grandmother. Now, I saw this feature earlier this week, and I was like, okay, that's a little bit strange. One, how much of a sample are they going to need of this person's voice to emulate it and whatnot? Turns out it's about a minute of audio is all you need, so really not that much. You break out an old tape recording, play it back to whatever this process is, and now they've got this, they can emulate this voice, at least to some extent. And, you know, for all the fuss that we had about, or excitement we had about Val Kilmer's voice being generated in Top Gun Maverick, since he had lost his voice due to health problems, it turns out they could have just called Amazon to do the job. Honestly, I can only imagine how this is going to be abused, or could be abused. I mean, you could have all kinds of, you know, record a message, get a somebody's voice sample from something like a podcast that they're talking on, and then all of a sudden, you know, anyone who basically wants a recording of somebody they really don't like saying something incredibly heinous, they can do this. So they just need to call our buddy Alex with an A. And with that, that is the wrap up for the week of 19 June 2022. I'm Jason Wood, and I will also see you next week with Doug back on the Security Weekly News.